My name is Dr. Regina Frost, and I'm a CMDA member. CMDA has impacted myself and my medical practice in many ways. First of all, CMDA has connected me with like-minded individuals. So by being a member, I've been able to be a part of a community where we have all things in common. And it reminds me of the New Testament church in Acts chapter 4, where it describes how all believers were together and they were sharing with those in need, meeting together to pray and worship and break bread. And I feel that CMDA has allowed me to do that. Within this community, I've also found support in the challenges of running a private practice, and also support when facing a malpractice claim. And CMDA has reminded me that medicine is our ministry, and it has given me the tools to pray with my patients in my practice. And from that community and support, I've also developed friendships through CMDA. And these same friends have also become prayer partners, where we meet every couple of weeks by phone and pray and follow up with each other and encourage one another. Additionally, being a CMDA member has created opportunities for me to get involved in the political arena to represent and defend our Christian morals and values in healthcare. And also, I've been able to attend the Remedy Conference, which provided tools to help me serve God's people globally through missions. So in the future, I look forward to serving with Global Health Outreach and also attending CMDA's media training. So CMDA has benefited me and my practice in many ways, and these are just a few. And I encourage you, if you're not already involved, to get involved, because there you will find community and support and friendships.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to CMDA Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO of CMDA. I hope that you're enjoying hearing from some of your colleagues, like Dr. Regina Frost on CMDA Matters, on the impact that CMDA has had in their lives and why they support this ministry. Well, one of the ways that you can support CMDA is by responding to a matching gift that we've received from a couple of our champions of changing hearts in healthcare. Every dollar given between now and June 30th will be matched up to $130,000. This is a huge blessing because our fiscal year ends on June 30th. You might imagine that this year has not been the best time for us to raise financial support for the many ministries of CMDA. And it just so happens to coincide with my first year at the helm here at CMDA. I would be grateful if you'd consider your best gift of the year to help us claim all of this match and to finish our fiscal year strong. You can do this simply by going to our website at cmda.org/gift and click on the banner Give to CMDA. Or if it's easier for you, call 888-230-2637. Well, I bet you agree that we have been going through a season of deep lament due to the global pandemic. And then this week has been a profoundly sad week in America, as we went over 100,000 deaths from COVID-19, and then the shocking and tragic death of Mr. George Floyd in Minneapolis, with all of the ensuing violence and destruction in cities across America. Well, we may call it prescient, but this week, a virtual panel was put together and a discussion moderated by our National Director for Campus and Community Ministries, Reverend Bill Reichart, joined by our Washington, D.C. Area Director, Ms. Nicole Hayes, and several other panelists in a webinar that's entitled, Created in His Image, Reversing Racism's Effects on Health and Healthcare. The panel was put together with different individuals, healthcare professionals, who have a background in serving in the inner city and battling against racism in our midst as healthcare professionals. You can watch this important discussion on the CMDA Student Life YouTube channel at cmda.org/Student Life YouTube, all one word, Student Life YouTube. My interview today is with Dr. Chris Hook, who contacted me in early March about the urgent need he felt that CMDA had to develop and promote public policy statements giving guidance to Christians on the front lines of the COVID-19 battle. And of course, there is personal risk, and it has been real in this battle against COVID-19. And there have been ethical dilemmas posed by this pandemic that have been somewhat unfamiliar to this recent young generation of healthcare professionals. Dr. Chris Hook is a consultant in the Division of Hematology and Associate Professor of Medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He is a graduate of Greenville University in Greenville, Illinois, and the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Peoria, Illinois. He received his training in internal medicine, hematology, and medical oncology from the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine. Now, I want you to listen to this incredible academic pedigree and why I have him on CMDA Matters this week. He was the founder of the Ethics Committee and Consultation Service at Mayo Clinic, Jacksonville, Florida, and then the Ethics Consultation Service for the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, as well as the Mayo Clinical Ethics Council, the Reproductive Medicine Advisory Board, the Transplantation Ethics Advisory Board, and the Artificial Intelligence Ethics Advisory Board, all for the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. He is Emeritus Director of Ethics Education for the Office of Clinical Ethics, which evolved out of that ethics council that he was part of forming. He still teaches several classes in biomedical and engineering ethics in the Mayo Graduate School and is part of the team that has been authorized to develop a master's program in biomedical ethics at Mayo Clinic. Pertinent to his work on the Special Task Force of Pandemic Policy for CMDA, he actually chaired the Bioterrorism and Institutional Ethics Task Force of Mayo's Bioterrorism and Infectious Disease Emergency Response Committee back in 2002. He is Senior Fellow of the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity and Adjunct Professor of Bioethics at Trinity International University. And some of you may remember, I had the Acting Director for CBHD, Dr. Matthew Epinet, on the program just a few weeks ago. Now, Dr. Hook has asked me to make it very clear that his comments on the program today are his own, reflecting a consensus of a special task force and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Mayo Clinic, where he is on faculty. Without any further intro, let's jump into my conversation with Dr. Chris Hook. Well, it is indeed a privilege for me today to welcome to the podcast Dr. Chris Hook, who's a hematologist, oncologist, practices at the Mayo Clinic. Well, about 2 months ago, you reached out to me and said, Mike, wow, don't you think that CMDA should have some sort of position statements about resources and about healthcare professionals' duties in such a pandemic? And so our president, Gloria Halverson, asked you to lead the charge, in fact, to chair a task force to look into a couple of issues. Just briefly talk to us about those two issues to sort of set the stage for a conversation that's going to follow.
My inspiration for that actually goes back to the early 2000s. And I've been thinking about these things for some time. And as the COVID situation was beginning to become a real significant concern, then a lot of this background came to mind, and that's why I raised those questions with you and suggested maybe we would want to look at this to try to help provide our colleagues in CMDA some guidance, but be able to go beyond just how we were viewing things as a secular institution, but try to look at it even further from the perspective of the word and Christian ethics.
What sort of individuals joined you in this effort to put together a couple of very important position statements?
I was very fortunate to have with me some excellent folks who represent a wide variety of, I think, necessary inputs, some intensivists. We have individuals who've had, through their careers, infectious disease experience. We've had trauma surgeons who've been involved in the whole process of triage, resource allocation.
Including the military, right?
Including the military, including overseas service in mission work, dealing with resource poor situations, having to make extremely difficult decisions. And we've had, again, excellent individuals with bioethics training. We've had also individuals with theological training who would then be able to bring in the biblical and theological and philosophical elements who would enable us to interact with utilitarian thinking particularly, which was a major concern of our work. So it was a nice, well-rounded group who would bring in all of those different perspectives and enable us to approach it from a very strong biblical and theological, practical, and historical perspective.
Well, without any further delay, let's jump into talking about these statements, which are now officially board approved and are out there for public consumption online. Let's talk about the first statement, Dr. Hook, the duties of Christian healthcare professionals in a pandemic infection. What is the bottom line of this statement?
I think we can actually, you know, go to the introduction of that statement, where we feel that in our motivation to bring healthcare to individuals through God's love as extended to us and all people, and through the example of Christ healing, but also giving sacrificially to others, that it is our ethical responsibility and our professional duty, both as a group called medicine, but individually to assist in combating the spread of an infection, to help in the aid in the diagnosis and the care of those, to promote the development of appropriate treatments, and to provide guidelines for decision-making, which would ultimately translate into the other statement on triage and allocation. But this duty to care does, for, we believe, the Christian, extend to incurring personal risk, potentially of contracting the infectious agent and suffering harm even to the point of death, which is, you know, recognizing a pretty steep claim. But we felt that that was one of the questions that was being raised or would be raised.
It is a pretty steep claim, not the duty to die, but certainly, as you say in the statement, even to the point of death, that healthcare professionals need to be willing to put patients ahead of themselves.
Yes. We don't make the statement lightly, but as we searched the scriptures, we felt that that was actually a pretty clear demand upon us as Christians, let alone as healthcare professionals. When you go through the word, you see numerous times that the believer is called to sacrificial service. And, you know, Jesus himself makes that demand that you read, for instance, in Philippians 2, Paul talking about that just as Christ sacrificially took upon himself sin for the world and gave his life for us, that we should be willing to humbly serve other people, even potentially at the cost of our own lives. And that is the example that's been given to us. And so that is, you know, a part of sometimes what it means to bring healing and and God's love to a broken world. Now, we don't make that claim ignoring the fact that we're to be good stewards of our resources, that we engage in our activities, praying for wisdom and asking about, you know, when we might need to take on that risk, and those sorts of issues that come into the equation. But there's also a long historical example within the church of Christians taking on substantial risks in past epidemics and pandemics. And so in the document, we list some of those examples, and which some of our leaders like Calvin and Luther, mm-hmm. you know, who are very clear mm-hmm. in their statement that, you know, it's our duty, you know, to be there.
To run toward the battle, not away from it.
That's right.
Let's talk about the second statement entitled Triage and Resource Allocation Statement. And I think it was a challenging statement, was it not, to come up with by your task force?
It was very hard to do. It was difficult for many, many reasons, in part because we know that the tensions that are going to be present in that circumstance are going to be unavoidable, that there will be decisions made that will leave everyone with a sense of, you know, gosh, I wish it weren't this way. So in that sense, you know that there's going to be still some moral distress that's going to occur in the situation. Obviously, our goal is to minimize the moral distress, to do the best we can for our patients, to try to promote the good and the right and the true as best we can, in spite of enormous pressures to potentially look at things in a more specifically utilitarian way. So it was from that reason that we knew there was going to be a lot of tensions and difficulties coming up with an approach that we could live with ourselves as Christians, that we hoped our colleagues in CMBA would be able to live with, and yet still be able to practically meet the tremendous needs that were going to be out there. It was really difficult. And then, you know, there was the whole issue of this question of reallocation, which is supported by different models that are out there.
Give me an example of a reallocation in the midst of a pandemic.
So the idea of reallocation and why it is so problematic from our perspective is that essentially it's a non-consensual withdrawal of life support from one patient to give that life-supporting treatment, such as a ventilator, to another patient because the other patient has a higher probability of survival, is deemed to be a more worthy candidate. So there's multiple aspects of it there. Number one, it's a non-consensual withdrawal from the one patient. The reason why it's being withdrawn is because there's another patient that's being identified as being more worthy of receiving the treatment. So you're actually comparing one patient against another patient. You see where we are? We're pitting one against another. Regardless of what criteria we're maybe employing some sort of a metric, but we're saying, oh, this person's score is better than this person's score, therefore we're going to extubate this patient and we're going to then give the ventilator to this person. And that's a direct reallocation. it's a very utilitarian concept. The idea is, well, if this person has a greater likelihood of survival, then we should utilize our treatments to those individuals who have a better chance of surviving.
And utilitarianism, in my experience, Chris, is something that usually causes the hackles to go up on the back of Christian bioethicists next. Would you agree with that?
It does. And the reason it does is that in Christian bioethics, we tend to want to go beyond some strict idea of outcome, of consequentialism. We believe that there are rules, that there are principles that we follow, such as you don't, you know, deliberately murder or kill. We also believe that there are certain principles, like that all human beings possessing God's image are equal in value and worth, and that the utilitarian may certainly disagree with that, because one individual may have better contribution to society or have, you know, other sorts of contributions to make them more worthy than another individual. And you can then also introduce other sorts of schema, such as, well, it's not that, you know, they're going to survive just, you know, this particular infection or illness, but are they going to survive for a year, or are they going to survive for 5 years, or are they going to survive for 10 years? And you introduce all these other criteria that, you know, may not really be germane to the treatment of the patient at this particular moment. So you then eliminate not only other rules, but you potentially eliminate virtues, the intent, you know, of what it is we're trying to do. And we think that these other aspects of morality are crucial to making good ethical decisions. And so that's why, in general, we have a significant resistance to, you know, frank utilitarianism.
In terms of these models, would you say that most Christian bioethicists can agree that in the short term, if you run out of ventilators, that it's short-term outcome, not the long-term outcome, like you were saying, out to a year, but certainly in terms of who's going to be able to make it out the hospital door because of this illness, and if we're running short of supplies, is that is some mild utilitarianism that is applied even in the discussions that you had as a task force?
Yes. The whole issue of triage necessitates some choices that are made. And having been in military, you know, when we're trained in triage, we have to make choices of who's going to survive, what we do, and so there is some elements of utilitarianism that are employed. We all acknowledge that. But the issue is how much beyond some of those short-term choices do you go? And what we came up with, which our alternative to reallocation, was called optimal stewardship.
Yes, I want to hear about that.
We basically said that, number one, we wanted to remove this idea of pitting one patient directly against another, that we wanted the decisions of continuing the use of the life support therapies to be based upon that individual patient's status. So we would be very much assessing an individual, determining on an ongoing basis, using the best scores that we had based upon the length of the trial that they had received and so on. What is their likelihood of surviving the episode to get off, assuming that they could get off the ventilator, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but to survive the episode of the illness, the acute illness. And if we were confronted with a situation where we didn't feel continuation of treatment was beneficial to the end of surviving the acute illness, then we would discuss with the family and so on the withdrawal of treatment. And the only time that there would be withdrawal would be under those circumstances, when for that particular patient, we could not get to the appropriate medical end. And then that would free the resource up to then be given to whoever would be next available. So again, we would be trying to avoid, comparing one patient's score against another patient's score.
And really would be care like you would be doing in any non-pandemic situation. It would be, you'd be avoiding futility of care.
Exactly. And actually, we probably should be doing this more regularly and not, promoting ongoing unbeneficial treatment more than we do in the non-pandemic care. But that's a discussion
for another day.
But we would try to make sure that every patient would be able to be examined, that they would enter the initial triaging process rather than having these categorical stops. In other words, we wouldn't use age as a strict hard stop. We would bring the patient in, we would look at comorbidities, we would look at the other factors that would influence the potential for surviving the immediate infectious threat, as opposed to just simply saying you're 70, therefore you're not even going to be considered. The same thing with disabilities. The disability community continues to be extremely concerned that, they are being judged and excluded. I just saw this morning another emailing from the group Not Dead Yet, in which, they're struggling with the state of New York about their criteria as being excessively discriminatory. And we were wanting to be very sensitive in our statement to communicate to the disability community that no, we're not, going to let the presence of a disability necessarily exclude them from treatment. And if a patient has been on a ventilator, for 20 years, that's not going to prevent them from being considered for treatment of the infection should they develop it. They're not going to have their ventilator removed and given to someone else simply because they were ventilator dependent to begin with. And it's those kind of things that we are trying to oppose and make sure that everyone has access to an appropriate consideration and that everyone is valued as opposed to being discriminated against up front.
Dr. Chris Hook, thank you so much for your diligence and dedication with your task force.
Thank you, Dr. Chuck. I really appreciate it.
Well, as Dr. Hook was concluding that conversation, it made me think of Jesus' challenge to us that as much as you have done it unto the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you've done it unto me. And I think you heard from Dr. Hook and his task force that they were working very hard to promote the concept that we are going to look out for everyone in this COVID-19 outbreak. And we are not going to differentiate between one who's perceived as having greater value in our society than another. I'm so grateful for the work of Dr. Hook and that special task force. You can find both of those statements on our website when you go to cmda.org/coronavirus, as well as other COVID-19 related information that I hope will be helpful to each of you. We have a couple of resources that you can order by calling us at 888-230-2637 or go to our website, cmda.org/shop, and you will find first Medical Ethics and the Faith Factor, a handbook for clergy and healthcare professionals by one of our CMDA bioethics greats and a former trustee, Dr. Bob Orr. And a second book, Why the Church Needs Bioethics, a guide to wise engagement with life's challenges, by the former director of the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity at Trinity International University, Dr. John Kilner. And you had a chance to hear from him just a few weeks ago when I interviewed Dr. Matthew Epinette. I encourage you to seek out one or both of those resources. There are a couple of webinars that I would like to recommend to you if you can find the time. One took place actually last weekend, headed up by CMDA's psychiatry section, hosted by Dr. Harold Koenig, very, very well-known, renowned psychiatrist at Duke, talking about religion and mental health, research and clinical applications. Dr. Koenig inspires Christians in the practice of psychiatry to consider the relationship between their faith and professional practice, integrating the knowledge and understanding of valid psychiatric approaches to mental health and healing consistent with Christ's redemptive love. You can watch that webinar by going to cmda.org/psychiatry webinar series, three words into one, psychiatry webinar series. Last week, I also mentioned an upcoming ICMDA webinar with Drs. David and Janet Kim, the co-founders of Beacon Christian Community Health Center, and also guests on the program a few weeks ago. This webinar will be on Monday, June 8th from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. They will be discussing the topic of building spiritual resilience with COVID-19, lessons from New York City. You can participate in that particular webinar by going online to icmda.net/training/webinars. You can join for free. You'll just need to register in advance. As I bring this program to a conclusion, I want to share with you some very good news to report on one of our federal lawsuits. As you may know, we have been fighting to protect our members by defending a very good conscience protection regulation enacted last year by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. With legal help from Beckett, we are fighting in federal court against the abortion industry and their political friends who want to force us as healthcare professionals to participate in procedures and prescriptions that end human lives and violate our consciences. The good news is that just last week, dozens of members of the U.S. Congress, as well as 16 states, their attorney generals, plus religious groups and medical organizations, filed court briefs supporting our lawsuit as we intervene with Health and Human Services. Now, Dr. Regina Frost, whom you heard in the CMDA Impact at the very beginning of this program, she is actually the face of this lawsuit. I have been calling her a modern Queen Esther, and God has given her such clarity of communication. She has been writing well on our behalf in the Federal Registry. I want to challenge you to pray for Regina as she has stood up. She is one of our WPC leaders, and I know the enemy is going after her as she practices healthcare and OB in Detroit. Well, you can read more about this very encouraging development at cmda.org/newsroom. That's cmda.org/newsroom. And as you pray for Dr. Frost, please remember to pray for us and our attorneys, especially as we fight on your behalf. We stand in the gap for you who practice in healthcare conscientiously. And as Dr. Chris Hook mentioned today, demonstrating optimal stewardship at all times in the lives of your patients. We pray for God's peace and His wisdom to prevail in your lives and in our nation during this time, because this matters to you and to me, and it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next week.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.